seconds remaining. As Wayne holds his man away from the puck. Who's got?
Closing in. Nicholas Backstrom, high shot of the chin, score! Reese Galoff never saw it. It's 4-1.
Hello, Merry Christmas and Happy Holiday out there. Show number 3, and quite a lot of it has happened since the last show. That coaching change on the team, several in fact, I'm going to get into that. Hope your holiday's working out the way you want it, you on the other side of the earbuds. I know mine is so far, spending time with a lot of good people, and family, of course, and that's what the holidays are all about. Get a chance to kick back, but we're getting in the heart of the hockey season here, way past the quarter pole already. I'm getting the one-third done, and we're moving on down to the All-Star break, where a lot of things happen, and that's where number 4 is going to take place. But before we get to that, gotta get through this show, and like I said, a lot's happened. So let's just get to it. First big story, of course, we're going to cover everything from the league in the first period. First big story I want to get into, of course, is the big news about the realignment. Starting next season, there's going to be a whole new plan, whole new format. The league is abandoning the two conference, a 6-division format, going to a 4-conference format. Basically, it's going to split up the 30 teams into 4 conferences. I don't know why they're called conferences. They may as well just call them divisions, but there's going to be 2 conferences, as it were, of 7 teams each, and 2 others at 8 teams each. And how it's going to work out for the Caps is that they will be lumped back in with their old Patrick division rivals. If you follow the team for as long as I have, you know, back in the 80s and 90s and early 90s, the Caps were in the Patrick division, the only 6-team division in the old 21-team NHL, and had a lot of rivalries built up, especially with the Philadelphia Flyers, the Pittsburgh Penguins, and of course the Rangers and the Islanders and the Devils. All 5 of those teams are going to be in the same conference that the Caps are going to be in, along with the Carolina Hurricanes. So that's going to be, that's pretty good. And that's one thing that I like about this new format is that, the traditional rivalries, the league did as much as they could to preserve the traditional rivalries. So I like that. It looks like they've gone ahead and done it all by time zone. You have in another conference, you have the 3 Eastern Canadian teams, the 3 Ontario Quebec teams, Montreal, Ottawa, and Toronto, all in the next conference over, along with Boston. So those traditional rivalries are preserved there. The 2 Florida teams are also in that same conference, along with the Buffalo Sabres gonna be in that conference, and might as well go over the other 2 conferences out west. Those are the 8-team conferences: Chicago, Columbus, Dallas, Detroit, Minnesota, Nashville, St. Louis, and the New Jets, the former Atlanta Thrashers, are in another conference, and in the westernmost conference you have the Ducks from Anaheim, Calgary, Colorado, Edmonton, Los Angeles, Phoenix, San Jose, and Vancouver. Of course, all this is subject to change because there's long-standing rumors going around with Florida maybe not staying where they're going to be. And, of course, the league still owns the Phoenix Coyotes, so not sure what's going to happen to those two teams. Not sure if they're going to stay put. But I think a reason they did this was to give the league a little flexibility in moving teams around should they need to, should that have to happen. But let's not get into that because we never want to see that happen. Not with any team. No city deserves that. I don't think it's happened all too much in the league's history. So I found so. Not going to get into that, but I would suspect that's a reason why they did that. Not that it's a good thing. But the thing that I like most about this setup is that another reason why they've gone and done this is because Commissioner Gary Bettman appears to want to change back to the old way of doing things where you had to finish in the top four in your division. Well, now that's the way things are now, or starting next season anyway. If you finish in the top four in your conference, you qualify for the playoffs, as opposed to the 1-8 format in each conference, which I never liked. I always thought that was ridiculous. And it always set everything up for those ridiculous first round upsets, which of course, unfortunately, we know all too painfully well here, that has happened or can happen. So, I would like to think that, Commissioner Gary Bettman is atoning for some of his past sins in returning to a format that worked very well in the past. Now the reason why I do this show is because it's more that positive proof that if you don't learn from your past mistakes, you're doomed to repeat them and try to fix them and go back to the way that worked. Well, that's what's working here. That's what's going on here, I think. So, yeah, be nice to have those first round matchups like we used to back in the 80s where you would draw. I'm not worried about this. You would think we'd be worried about it, but a draw like Pittsburgh or Philadelphia in the first or second round would be absolutely great. I mean, imagine having that every year. And I would think that would be a great thing for the league, to have those intense rivalries from the season carry over into the year. And speaking of the regular season, with this format, each team is guaranteed a visit to all 29 other cities at least once. Ugh, can't talk. So that's another good thing. So every arena in the league gets to see the Stars once. The Stars of the league, provided they're not injured. But that's a whole other thing we're going to get into later. Don't want to get up too off topic here. So those are the three things to like about this new realignment plan. They're set up by time zone, which benefits all teams, cuts down on travel. Although I think Detroit really wanted to be in an easternmost group, but they didn't quite get what they wanted. But they got pretty close to it. The rivalries are left intact, and the playoff format, which kind of goes into what I don't like also, because all they've determined so far is that you finish in the top four in your conference and you qualify for the playoffs. So the first two rounds are figured out, but they haven't figured out what to do with the next two rounds. Haven't figured out what they're going to do with the winners of each conference, how they're going to face off. I imagine they're going to do it by regular season record, but they haven't even gotten that far yet. And Commissioner Gary Bettman has determined that it is to be determined later. They're going to figure that out at spring general managers meeting. So why they couldn't figure that out now, I don't know. But anyway, that's one thing I don't like. The second thing I don't like about the plan is I don't understand why they're calling them conferences when they're really just bigger divisions. Why call them conferences? You know, I guess any team above, anything above six teams is considered a conference. It's pretty lame if you ask me, but I don't understand why they can't call them divisions, but that's just me. I guess that's a bit, ticky-tack on my part, but I just don't understand why you can't call them divisions, why they have to be called conferences. So that's that. That's that for the alignment, scheme. I think it'll work out fairly well. Let's move on to the next topic, which is Sidney Crosby. Unfortunately, Mr. Crosby is out again. It's unfortunate for the game. I'm not a big fan of his, but I'm a big fan of hockey, and, you know, the truth of it is he makes the game better. And I did say in the last show that, at the time he was the best player in the league, and to some extent he still is. He's shown what he can do on the ice. Unfortunately, his first game back was the only game where he got a goal. Not to say that he gradually got worse after that, but what happened was he collided with his own player in a game, and at first he was thinking there wasn't a recurrence of the post-concussion syndrome, and then it turned out it was. Now, the big question here is this an indictment of the procedure? I don't think it is. I think the Pittsburgh Penguins did everything right. They did everything they could to make sure he was ready. So I don't think anything went wrong there. Like I said, it happened as a result of accidental collision. I said on the last show, you're never ever gonna completely get rid of all concussions out of the game. Accidents will happen. You know, Elvis Costello wrote the song, accidents will happen. And they did. It did in this case anyway. And so he's out now, unfortunately, for an indefinite period of time. But the thing of it is, they've got to concentrate on his health is the most important thing. So it could be quite some time. And the league may have to brace itself to come to grips with the fact that he may miss the rest of the season, including the playoffs. So that's second big story. Next big story that happened in the league is the coaching carousel. Of course, that affected us. But brief rundown of how it's happened in the league. Of course, right around a few weeks before the second show, you had Davis Payne from St. Louis getting fired, replaced by Ken Hitchcock. And since then, we've had many other coaching changes. Los Angeles Kings, boy, what a mess that turned out to be. Terry Murray, former Caps coach, got fired by them, replaced on an interim basis by John Stevens, and now they've hired Daryl Sutter. Why they couldn't just hire Daryl Sutter outright, well, it's been documented. It was just a mess. You know, why they couldn't have a smoother transition there, I don't know. It's just awful the way they went about that. Carolina, the Hurricanes, they fired Paul Maurice. How he managed to hang on to that job, I'll never know, because he did not do a thing for that team. But all I have to say, it's about time. He was replaced by Kirk Muller, former New Jersey Devils captain. So he's making a go of it at his first head coaching gig in the NHL. And, let's see. Of course, we had our change here. Bruce Boudreau being replaced by Dale Hunter. We're on that next segment. But that also affected the Anaheim Ducks in that several days later, they fired Randy Carlyle and replaced him with none other than Bruce Boudreau. And so, I think some of us here are hoping that Anaheim can climb out of their hole because that benefits us in quite a few ways. Get to see Gabby do well again. I think we can all agree he deserves all the success in the world, for what he did for the Caps. Also, Anaheim Ducks finishing better than the Colorado Avalanche benefits us in that we're hoping that the Avalanche finishes dead last, or at least close to dead last, so we can get a high draft pick because we own their draft pick for the next draft. Next year's supposed to be a good drafting class, so that's another benefit. Now, the most recent coaching change has taken place in the Montreal Canadiens. They have fired their coach, Jacques Martin, and it's generated a lot of controversy because the man they've hired to coach the team in the interim, Randy Cunningworth, does not speak a lick of French. Why is this so controversial? Well, because Montreal is in Quebec, if no one knows. Anyone listening to the show, not sure about your geography. Montreal's in Quebec. Quebec is a predominantly French-speaking province of Canada. Their provincial motto is Je me souviens, which means I remember. I remember the old ways, established by French colonists back in the 18th century. So, they're very proud of their heritage, and the Canadiens were set up as the team for not only the whole of Quebec province, but especially the French-speaking population of La Belle Province, which is what they call it. So to hire a coach, hire someone that does not speak hardly a word of French, I hate to say it, but I can understand how the fans and the government and everybody there would take that as an insult. So analyzing this issue, let's just take it at the baseline. Jacques Martin, he had to go. There's no question about that. The team was not performing under him. And they were dead last in their division. Weren't going anywhere. What I question is why this guy Cunningworth? I don't understand what makes him more qualified, than anyone else. They could have reached out to any I'm sure there are a lot of French-speaking coaches out there, and since this hiring, Patrick Waugh, the ex-goalie of both the Canadiens and the Avalanche, and the owner of a successful Quebec League junior hockey team, has expressed his interest in coaching the team. So why they didn't reach out to him, I'm not sure. But like I said, I can understand the issue from both sides. Actually, I mean, Montreal, like I said, Montreal is mostly French-speaking. So they're very proud of their heritage. The Canadiens represent the French-speaking people of Canada, so they regard it as their team. I mean, come on, it would be like if the Orioles or Nationals hired someone who spoke only Spanish to manage that ball club. Now, even though there are a lot of Spanish-speaking players in the league and on both teams, guy who can't communicate with the media in English, I think we would all take that as an insult. We were baseball fans anyway. On the other hand, there's no reason the provincial government has to get involved and say, well, look, you people need to hire an English, a French-speaking coach, or we're going to stage all these boycotts, we're going to do all these sanctions against your team, we're going to pass all these laws. I just think that's ridiculous. It makes everything look stupid. There's no reason, never any reason, I think, for these local and state or any government to interfere with the functioning of a team or a league unless they've broken a law. Now, there's no law that says, must hire a French-speaking coach. There's no prerequisite. It's an implied prerequisite, but it's not an express prerequisite. So that part of it, I think, is totally ridiculous. But those are, I imagine that will work itself out. I think if Mr. Cunningworth is willing to learn on the job, as it were, I think it'll work out. And as has been said, the best language of all is winning. So if he can show them how to do that, I think in the end it won't really matter. Fairly easy to say. So those are the major stories, the four major stories that have taken place over the past month or so. That's we're now caught up on the league. Let's move on to the next period and talk about the Caps. Okay, second period. And, of course, biggest thing that's happened, Dale Hunter. Dale Hunter is now the coach of the Caps. And a lot of people saw this as a great thing. Of course, the Caps legend, he that scored the goal, the most important goal, most exciting goal, most memorable goal in Caps history, 88 playoffs. First round against the Flyers, it's overtime series-winning goal, and no one who's seen it will ever forget. Right now, though, the team is still doing just okay under him. Right now, team stands at Caps stand at 5 wins, 5 losses, 1 OT loss so far. Most recent, of course, against the Devils. I think they showed a lot of grit in that game. They fell behind 3-0. And, powered by Jason Chimera's 2 goals. And, Brooks Like got the rally started. Showed a lot of grit in that game. And I was really happy to see that, because after that third goal, they were looking defeated, but it just looked like Hunter had that team in a no-quit mode, and that's very good to see. It's always good to see. Unfortunately, they came up short, in the shootout, and of course, with the likes of Patrick Eliash and Ilya Kovalchuk, poor Michael Neuwirth didn't stand a chance. Got Neuwirth on the old head fake, leg fake, finger fake, hand fake, skate fake, stick fake, hand fake. You get the idea. So they got it out a point. But unfortunately, couldn't get the win. So they got a lot of grit going for them. The building into Dale Hunter's type of character. Unfortunately, there's still some things going wrong with the team. I'll get into that in a second. But if you want the absolute best explanation, I think, of what is expected, how Dale Hunter's system would shake out. If you listen to the Puck podcast about 3 weeks ago, actually be the week after Bruce Boudreau was hired, after the Thanksgiving week. I don't know the date off the top of my head, but if you listen to that week's Puck podcast, Doug Stolhand over there did a terrific job in explaining an explanation of Dale Hunter's system. Basically, mark your man, forecheck aggressively, and win your battles wherever, and don't take unnecessary chances, don't take unnecessary risks, just keep on forechecking, you win your battles, and the chances will present themselves and come out as quickly as you can out of your zone and win the transition game. And that's basically, you know, it in a nutshell. And Doug Stolhan does a pretty good job, I think, of explaining that in that podcast. So give it a listen if you want. I'm always pushing that show because I think it's the best hockey podcast there is. And it's that way for a reason. So this is another example of that. But what I think is going wrong with the team, and I'm not alone, certainly, first and foremost being the power play. Got to get the power play going. They are at an abysmal 16.8% right now. That's good for the exact middle of the league. You know, a good power play, should click at, well, today's power play should click, a good power play should click at, I would say 19% or higher. I know that doesn't sound like much, but that works out to about one more goal for every 15 to 30 chances. And think about that. So that's one more goal every couple, three games. So that, in these one goal games that they both win and lose, that makes the difference. That really makes the whole difference, I think. So that's one thing they desperately need to improve on. Get that one more goal every so often. It'll make the difference between a win and a loss. Get the power play going, cure a lot, not all, but a lot of their ills. Next thing I want to go over is the fact that they're still having lapses in coverage, and that was evident in, well, that's evident in every game where they give up more than two goals. The Flyers game, the defensive game obviously was just totally absent, the one where they lost to the Flyers 5-1. Not sure what happened in the second period against the Devils a couple nights ago, and it's just awful. Blown coverages, missed assignments. I don't get why this team hasn't figured it out yet. And another mental lapse that they're having is that they're still prone to these bench minors where they got too many men on the ice. It's happening all too often. And key to the transition game is get the right guys on the ice at the right time. Well, if they haven't figured out how to do that yet, they need to do that fairly quick here. Because that's one more power play you're giving the other team just because of a simple mistake that you don't have to make. Just pay attention to when you have to get out there. Pay attention to the transition game when you're supposed to take your shift. So really, it sounds easy. I guess it's not, but it's fixable. Bottom line is it's fixable. Get rid of these silly bench minor penalties where they're caught for too many men on the ice. It happened with Boudreau also, that I noticed. It would happen quite a bit. So I guess that's part of a transition to a whole new system, but it's gotta be corrected and as soon as possible. Another thing going wrong with the team is the goaltending. Until recently,
but he didn't put up a very solid goaltending game, I think.
Michael Neuwirth seems to be taking
so it's
over
getting
the
better.
Number one spot, at least for
and,
now.
I think he's working his way back into.
Didn't do as well as he could have in the shootout,
or better than
he
a backup.
Flat out beaten on the
Tomas
goals.
Kuhn,
unfortunately, on the opposite end, has played himself out of the spot for the time being, and he's got to be motivated now to take it back. Essentially, he's playing for a better contract. He's playing for his last contract is what he's doing. I don't know that he's going to be with the team next year, but he's playing for a better contract. And it's making less and less sense why we got him. because I don't think goaltending was the problem last year, but if he wants the job, it's his for the taking still. He's got the chance, but he's gotta earn it now, no question. And the last thing that needs to get fixed is the offense. Well, maybe they're on the way back. Because it looks like Ovechkin is taking a lot more shots, and more shots, of course, in the long run equals more goals. And of course you have Nicklas Backstrom contributing just about every game. So, but when they're not able to convert their chances, it's nice to know that you've got guys on other lines like Brooks Like and Jason Chimera who can get the goals, get the offense going. Now on the second and third line, that's what they're supposed to do. So it's great to see that they can do that. So that, when the first line fails, which, you know, unfortunately they're still kind of in a semi-drought right now, it's good to see them pick up the slack or be able to pick up the slack. So it's getting there, it's not quite there, and unfortunately we're not gonna go back to the days where you can count on the team to score six or seven or more goals a night. It's, you know, sad to say, but those days are over. As much as we enjoyed them, that's not gonna happen anymore. But I think if the Caps get anywhere from three or four goals a game, and rely on the defense to clamp down, play a solid 60 minutes, that's the way to do it. That's how they'll win games. It's what they need to do. So that's what they need to fix. Now what's going right for the time being? Speaking of clamping down, the defense, obviously, they've definitely all bought into the defensive scheme. Cut way down on the goals against. I know I said before that there seem to be lapses in coverage, but those seem to be the exception rather than the rule. So it's good to see that they bought into that, bought into how they need to win their battles and get it out of their zone as quick as they can. Another thing that's going right is the penalty kill. Up until the game against the Devils a few nights ago, they went 5 straight games without giving up a power play goal. Always a good thing. I believe they're in the top third of the league, as far as, penalty killing, which is good. I was knocking the offense before, but like I said, when they do get going, it's usually at the right time. You had Ovechkin get the game winner against Winnipeg. Always great to see. And, they came back against the Devils. So not only, at least when the offense does get going, it gets going at the right time. It's going at the absolutely best time, the right time, in the game. So, slowly but surely you're seeing Dale Hunter put his stamp on the team. Slowly but surely you're seeing how it's taking effect. Because, as you know, he would always get the big goals. In his career, he scored 4 playoff overtime goals. So, you know, he had a knack for coming up big at the right time. That's one of his hallmarks. It's one of his traits. So, it's good to see that this team, that the Capitals are incorporating that in their style of play. And as I said, goaltending, well, it's the problem and it's the solution. As I said, Michael Neuvirth playing much better as of late, and I think it'll inspire Tomas Vokoun to get his game going. The question is it too late? Maybe, maybe not. Who knows? But the goaltending as of late has certainly been much better. Much, much better. Because, like I said, Neuvirth has made a habit of coming up with the big saves. He certainly did in the New Jersey game. He was pretty solid against Winnipeg. Came up with the shutout a few games ago. against Winnipeg on December the 15th. So, yeah, the goaltending's definitely coming back, but it was a weakness in the beginning of Dale Hunter's regime. It's just they gotta get better. There's no question about that. So that's the good and the bad with what's going on with the team. Now, another point of interest lately with the team has been Dale Hunter's contract, and outside the team, it's a source of controversy. It was revealed very recently, within the past week, that both Hunter and Capitals management, George McPhee, general manager, have mutually agreed that his contract is for the balance of this season, and they'll reassess and reevaluate where they want to go as far as what's going to happen after this season. And I personally, I don't see why this is such a big deal. Because if I were in Dale Hunter's position, I think I would do the same thing. And I don't blame the team for feeling the same way. Because this way, it gives everybody options. And if it's one good thing about life, it's having choices. So, I can't wrap my head around why this is such a big deal. I really don't understand it. Because I hate to keep referencing him because it's not like he's the only source of information. Now, but you go to places like, you know, Puck Daddy, and you see the headline, "Is Hunter on a short leash? Hunter's contract's only for 1 year. Oh, it might be a problem. Might indicate that they might be saying that they don't trust him. They don't think he's going to do well." It's the thing I can't stand about Puck Daddy, is he will try to make something out of absolutely nothing. Always. He did it with the whole steroid thing, the arrest of that cokehead supplier who was arrested in Florida and said, some of my clients were on the Washington Capitals. Here we are 2 years later. Has anything come of that?
No.
It's like Puck Daddy smells something he thinks is there, but he's actually smelling something else. Barking up the wrong tree, and call it whatever you like, but he's obviously assuming too much again, trying to make a story out of nothing. But the thing of it is, everybody has options. That's the big thing. I think that was the smartest way to play it. And you can't have it both ways, guys. Guys who are reporting, on the NHL, you so-called experts out there, you can't have it both ways. You criticize Ted Leonsis for signing Nick Backstrom and Alex Ovechkin to these long contracts. So what would you have? You want the coach to have a long contract, but the players to have short contracts? Is that it? And you can't have it both ways. You can't say, well, a long-term contract is stupid in one sense, but smart in another. No. No, you can't have it both ways. And Dale Hunter is the manager, co-owner, coach of, or was the coach of, a successful Ontario League junior hockey club. Okay? You can understand why he wouldn't want to give all of that up completely. So, while I guess you could question his commitment, but you can't question his effort, and you can't question that the team wanted this guy. Capitals management, George McPhee, obviously wanted him to do the job. But it's good to always keep your options open. Always good to keep your options open. Now, the thing that I'm worried about in all this is, what if Hunter decides he does not want to coach after this year? What if he decides that it's not for him, he wants to stick with running his junior team in London, Ontario? Where do they go from here? That's the thing I'm worried about the most. Because then they have to, they have to search for a coach, and, you know, it would have to be, I would prefer someone with some sort of NHL experience, be they a former assistant or whatever. But I don't want one of these new coaches that have never coached never been a head coach in the league, or never been a head coach at all. Or, God forbid, anything like what we had with Bruce Cassidy. Anybody remember him? Yeah, yeah. It was scarier. Anybody who can remember him remembers what a disaster that was. So that's the only thing I'm worried about, because I think over time we'll all see that Dale Hunter is the best fit for this team. Unless, of course, the team tanks, but I don't see that happening. I think slowly but surely they're going to get better, but, you know, like I keep saying, time's starting to run out, so they really need to get past this thing where they, you know, play 500 hockey. They obviously need to play better than 500 hockey to get to where they need to be. So that's where the Washington Capitals are as of now. Going to keep close watch on them, obviously, over the next month or so. And by then, it'll be the All-Star break, be the halfway point of the season, and perhaps be the time at that point to make some trades, and, you know, might have some news for you on that front for the next show. So that's where we're at as far as the team. We'll move on to third and final here. Okay, let's close everything out with the third period. Of course, this is our historical segment of the game. And with the Winter Classic about a week away, of course, that's the annual outdoor game. This year, it's going to be the Rangers and the Flyers at Franklin Field in Philadelphia. I would like to do a bit on the origins of the game. The real game, the outdoor game, which is where it was first developed. Now, brief history, of course, is imported into Canada by traditions of the Scottish and Dutch settlers. It's not clear which of these are the true forefathers of the game. Of course, you have the definite influence of the Mi'kmaq First Nation from Nova Scotia. They definitely put their stamp on the history of the development of the game in the early 19th century in Canada. But what is no doubt a part of the early development of the game is the old Scottish game of shinny. And what that is just an informal hockey game with basically no goalies, no assigned positions. It's pretty much a pickup game. You just skate around. You shoot at the goal. There's no goalies. You just any frozen outdoor ice surface, a pond, river, canal will do. And they usually played with short sticks, not the sticks like what the players would use today, usually something not much more than about a foot long that you could carry in one hand. and just kind of skate over and whack it with one hand, and that would do. That's usually how it was played. Now the term shinny, kind of a funny name, and you know, our play-by-play announcer, well, not the play-by-play announcer, but the analyst, Craig Laughlin, there's a little bit of funny history with that, but I'm not going to get into that. Anybody that's in the know will know what I'm talking about, but if you're curious, shoot me an email at blueliner77@gmail.com and ask me. But the name Shinny actually derives, and this is something I read from one of Stan Fischler's books, but the name shinny derives from the Old English term of shinning to your side, from field hockey. That's the rule in field hockey that you must always play right-handed. If you have ever seen a field hockey stick, then seen that the stick itself is flat on one side, you must play the ball with the flat side of the stick. And the flat side is always, unless you turn it over in a certain way, the flat side of the stick is held. If your bottom hand is the right hand, you have to hold it right-handed, unless, like I said, you turn it over. So, shinny, the name shinny is derived from that. The term is shinning to your side, playing right-handed. So the sticks would always be held in the small sticks would be always held in the right hand of the player. Now, of course, this is what evolved into the game we know of as hockey today. But of course, it started in many different places throughout Canada. St. Lawrence River in Montreal, Quebec City, Kingston, Ottawa, places like that. And it would often start out as teams of anywhere from 7 to 13 players each would just play a pickup game of hockey. No goalies, no assigned positions. Not even sure if there was a face-off, to be honest. Just a bunch of guys just knocking a puck around. Now, the history of the puck in of itself is also interesting. Of course, they always use the ball. Stick and ball games have been around for a long, long time, literally over a couple thousand years. And part of the history of hockey is the Irish sport of hurling, which of course uses a ball. But the reason why hockey is so different and uses a puck is because they discovered that a ball would leave the playing surface too easily. And of course, back then, even when the indoor rinks were developed, you didn't have your plexiglass, you didn't have anything protecting the spectators at all. So in an effort to make sure that there wasn't any unnecessary injury as far as that went, figured out that the ball was not much good, so they turned it into a puck so it was less likely to leave the playing surface. So if you've ever wondered why hockey uses a puck instead of a ball, that's why. And of course, I think we all know, just a simple matter of physics, that a puck slides on the playing surface a lot better than a ball would. It makes for a much more interesting game to watch. Of course, it also depends on the ice surface that you're playing on. Those are the basic origins of the outdoor game. Now, of course, decades later, you had the development of the first indoor rinks, but that's the basic origin of the game, and that's why they call it shinny, because that's what it evolved from. So, the Winter Classic, of course, tying us all together, is the league's attempt at going back to the origins, not a complete return to those true origins, but it's a good replication. So, I'd like to say, always good to know where you came from. So I think that'll wrap it up for this Christmas edition of the show. Again, happy holidays, Merry Christmas to you all. Thanks very much for listening. And as I said before, we'll shoot for the All-Star break for the next show. And like I said, by then, hopefully we'll have some news for you as far as any developments. Always seem to have at least one or two big trades then, so we'll discuss that. May even involve the Capitals. And if you have any questions, feel free to email me at blueliner77@gmail.com. That's blueliner77@gmail.com. Also leave a comment at powerplaypoint.blogspot.com or the podcast site blueliner77.podbean.com. Thanks very much for listening, and again, happy holidays to you all, Merry Christmas, and hope to hear from you soon. Have a good one.
Ovechkin to the backhand. He scores! A dazzling overtime winner for the Great Eights.